We will now go to Exodus, the 19th and 20th chapter. The reason why I'm going to read this both is the 18th chapter looks like it was inserted, not inserted, it's put there after another event took place. That is after the 23rd chapter of Exodus, then it looks like this took place then. But it's spoken of before it went in. We'll talk about that briefly, and then we'll spend more time in the 19th chapter.
Yitro, the priest of Midian, Moshe's father-in-law, heard all that God had done for Moshe and for Israel's people, how the Lord had brought Israel out of Mitzrayim. Now Yitro, Moshe's father-in-law, had taken Zipporah, Moses' wife, after he had sent her home, along with her two sons. The name of the one was Gershom, for he said, I have been a sojourner in a foreign land. And the name of the other, Eleazar, for he said, the God of my father was my help and delivered me from the sword of Pharaoh. Yitro, Moshe's father-in-law, came with his sons and his wife to Moshe in the wilderness where he was encamped at the mountain of God. And when he sent word to Moshe, I, your father-in-law Yitro, am coming to you with your wife and her two sons with her. Moshe went out to meet his father-in-law, bowed down and kissed him. And they asked each other of their welfare and went into the tent. And Moshe told his father-in-law all that the Lord had done to Pharaoh and to the people of Mitzrayim for Israel's sake, all the hardship that had come upon them in the way, and how the Lord had delivered them. And Yitro rejoiced over all the good that the Lord had done to Israel, in that he had delivered them out of the hand of the people of Mitzrayim. Yitro said, blessed be the Lord, who has delivered you out of the hand of the people of Mitzrayim and out of the hand of Pharaoh, and has delivered the people out from under the hand of the people of Mitzrayim. Now I know that the Lord is greater than all gods, because in this affair they dealt arrogantly with the people. And Yitro, Moshe's father-in-law, brought a burnt offering and sacrifices to God. And Aharon came with all the leaders of Israel to eat bread with Moshe's father-in-law before God. The next day, Moshe sat to judge the people, and the people stood around Moshe from morning till evening. When Moshe's father-in-law saw all that he was doing for the people, he said, what is it this you were doing for the people? Why do you sit alone and all the people standing around you from morning till evening? And Moshe said to his father-in-law, because the people come to me to inquire of God. When they have a dispute, they come to me, and I decide between one person and another, and I make them know the statutes of God in his laws. Moshe's father-in-law said to him, what you're doing is not good. You and the people with you will certainly wear yourselves out, for the thing is too heavy for you. You are not able to do it alone. Now obey my voice. I will give you advice, and God be with you. You shall represent the people before God and bring their cases to God, and you shall warn them of all the statutes and the laws, and make them know the way in which they must walk and what they must do. Moreover, look for able men from all the people, men who fear God, who are trustworthy and hate a bribe, and place such men over the people as chiefs of thousands, of hundreds, of fifties, and of tens. And let them judge the people at all times, every great matter that they shall bring to you, but any small matter they shall decide themselves, so it be with easier for you, and they shall bear the burden with you. If you do this, God will direct you, and you will be able to endure, and all this people also will go to their place in peace. So Moshe listened to the words of his father-in-law and all that he had said. Moshe chose able men out of all of Israel and made them heads over the people, chiefs of thousands, of hundreds, of fifties, and tens. And they judged the people at all times. Any hard case they brought to Moshe, but all small matters they decided themselves. Then Moshe let his father-in-law depart, and he went away to his own country. On the third new moon, after the people of Israel had gone up out of the land of Mitzrayim, on that day they came to the wilderness of Sinai. Then they set out from Rephidim and came into the wilderness of Sinai, and they encamped in the wilderness. There Israel camped before the mountain, while Moshe went up to God. The Lord called out from the mountain, saying, Thus you shall say to the people of the house of Jacob, and tell the people of Israel, You yourselves have seen what I did to the people of Mitzrayim, how I bore you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. Now therefore, if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, you shall be my treasured possession among all peoples, for all the earth is mine, and you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words that you shall speak to the people of Israel. So Moshe came and called the elders of the people and set before them all the words that the Lord had commanded him. All the people answered together and said, All that the Lord has spoken we will do. And Moshe reported the words of the people to the Lord. And the Lord said to Moshe, Behold, I am coming to you in a thick cloud, and that the people may hear when I speak with you, and may also believe you forever. Then Moshe told the words of the people to the Lord, and the Lord said to Moshe, Go to the people and consecrate them today and tomorrow, and let them wash their garments, and be ready for the third day. For on the third day the Lord will come down on Mount Sinai in the sight of all the people. And you shall set limits for the people all round, saying, Take care not to go up to the mountain or touch the edge of it. Whoever touches the edge of the mountain shall be put to death. No hand shall touch him, but he shall be stoned or shot. Whether beast or man, he shall not live. When the trumpet sounds a long blast, they shall come up to the mountain. So Moshe went down from the mountain to the people and consecrated the people, and they washed their garments. And he said to the people, Be ready for the third day. Do not go near a woman. On the morning of the third day, there were thunders and lightning and a thick cloud on the mountain and a very loud trumpet blast, so that all the people in the camp trembled. Then Moshe brought the people out of the camp to meet God, and they took their stand at the foot of the mountain. Now Mount Sinai was wrapped in smoke because the Lord had descended on it in fire. The smoke of it went up like the smoke of a kiln, and the whole mountain trembled greatly. And as the sound of the trumpet grew louder and louder, Moshe spoke, and God answered him in thunder. The Lord came down on Mount Sinai at the top of the mountain, and the Lord called Moshe to the top of the mountain, and Moshe went up. And the Lord said to Moshe, Go down and warn the people, lest they break through to the Lord to look, and many of them perish. Also, let the priests who come near to the Lord consecrate themselves, lest the Lord break out against them. And Moshe said to the Lord, The people cannot come up to the Mount Sinai, for you yourself warned us, saying, Set limits around the mountain and consecrate it. And the Lord said to him, Go down and come up bringing Aharon with you. But do not let the priests and the people break through to come up to the Lord, lest he break out against them. So Moshe went down to the people and told them.
Okay, any comments?
Third day
stuff. Your what? Third day stuff. Third day, okay. 3 days, something very, always 3 days, very fascinating terminology.
It's always, I'm sorry, it's always funny to me that that third day was supposedly a Sunday. So I had to wash my clothes on Friday and Sabbath in order to be ready for Sunday.
Interesting. We will talk about that much later. Any other comments? Well, she had a comment.
In verse 21, it says, Fear God, men of truth. These are the men, that able men that Jethro was saying to appoint for judges or
yep.
Fear, the men that fear God, men of truth, hating Jeff used the word bribery, but mine is covetousness, and I thought that there's a difference between a bribe and covetous.
What verse was that again now?
Verse 21 and 21.
Okay,
18.
Wait. We're briefly going to hit the 18th chapter for just a moment. All right. It's unusual. I'm not quite sure, because in the book of Numbers, where God, Moses cried out to God for help. And God then gave him 70 men. And then God talked about captives of tens, hundreds, and thousands. Why it's here, I'm not quite sure, except in the statement of Jethro, as your English language has it, he came to understand that God, really, the God of Jacob, was the true God. It sensed him at that point in time. The part that's difficult for me, and only for me, nobody else, is the certain thing. Let's get a look at verse 5 of the 18th chapter first. It says, "And Jethro, Moses' father," I'm reading Old English now, "came with his sons and his wife unto Moses, unto the wilderness where he camped at Mount of Elohim." Now they are not there yet in the 19th chapter. They're not there yet. So now there's a little question that comes up. And so I'm not doubting it. I'm just saying it's not that he wasn't there. He was there. I just have a question of the wording that takes place. Verse 12 of the 18th chapter. And Joshua's father-in-law, or Moses' father-in-law, took a holah offering and sacrifices to Elohim. Now, he didn't do any sacrificing at time, leaving Egypt, at any time, until after the Ten Commandments were given, not before. And kind of interesting. He built the altar, yes, for the purpose of the sacrifices, but so it's one of those questions I have. I don't have an answer for these things. And it says that to eat bread with Moses' father-in-law before Elohim. Verse 15 now. As Moses said unto his father-in-law, "Because the people came unto me to inquire of Elohim." Now, when God began to talk and give precise judgments, begins in chapter 21, 22, and 23. Now, where does this particular chapter fit? I don't know. I'm just telling you, it seems odd because he couldn't give judgments because he didn't know what the judgments were because he'd not heard what God had to say yet. Later on, as we get deeper into Exodus, we'll find out that Moses went up the mountain the second time for a reason, to learn more of judgments, learn more of things. But we'll get that when that time happens. So I have a little, this is my only thing that I have. And verse 20, verse 15, 16 rather, "And they, when they have a matter, they come unto me, and I judge between one and another, and I do make them know the statutes of Elohim and his laws." He had not yet received them. He goes to Mount Sinai first, and we read there in the 19th chapter, and he didn't go up the mountain alone. Who went with him? Aaron went with him. He also says that Joshua was there later, but we're not in that point. Let's put that aside for right now. That's only my questions on the 18th chapter. There's nothing really important in myself that I could find and dissect out and pull out, because the 70 elders were given to Moses well past the first the Mount Sinai and the Ten Commandments in the book of Numbers. And that's when he cried out to God for help. And God says, "Okay, I'll help you." And he had the 70 men who were men who learned to fear God and tremble God. But he had to look for 19 verse. So let's go 19th. In the third month, that's why they left now, the first month, the second month, now we're in the third month. And it says now, we're in the third month, and verse 22 is very important. Previously in chapter 17, They were at camped at what place? Rephidim. Remember what that name means? He held up the rod. It wasn't a place with no water, though there was no water there. It was in order to be a place of safety or a place of to be at rest. And now they're leaving here in chapter 19. They're leaving that place now. Now, previously in the 17th chapter, we'll get a little more in detail. God has said, I want you to go ahead. And here also says the same thing. And they departed from Ramses, Rephidim. Remember, they had a war. They were at war. Now the war is finished. Exodus 19th chapter. And they came to what's called the desert or the barren place of what's called the Sinai. That is where the mountain itself was. Then they pitched in the wilderness, and there Israel camped before the mountain. That is the mountain of God. And now verse 3, God calls out to Moses, and he says, thus shall you say to the house of Jacob, and tell the children of Israel, what are you going to tell them? Ye have seen what I have done unto Egyptians, and how I bear you on eagle's wings, and brought you unto myself. Verse 5, now therefore, if they or ye obey, hearken unto, or Shema, my voice indeed, and keep my covenant, which they have not yet received, then you shall be a peculiar people, a special people, unto me above all in the earth. And of course, is to become what? Become kingdom of priests. So all of the family of Jacob were to become kingdoms of priests. Verse six, basically. I'm sorry, what?
I asked if we were kingdoms and priests too.
That's correct. And technically speaking, in the book of Revelation, it's worded quite wrong. He says you'll be kings and priests. It really doesn't mean two separate offices. It means you will have the office of priesthood. I'm sorry, what?
1 Peter 2:9 talks about that.
Yeah. And we say, well, because we live in this world, we think of priesthood based upon Catholicism, but not based upon God. All right? That's very important. Yes.
But women, I thought the priesthood was only for the men.
Correct. But echad, man and wife, they are echad. So what they had to work together. They always worked together. I mean, it wasn't just one man and she's out in the wilderness, but he's doing all the work. Women were very, very much involved. And we're building the tabernacle, find out an awful lot of women were involved building the tabernacle. Yes. Especially the material.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the guy knows how to pick up a stone and throw it, but does he know how to make material? I'm not saying he didn't. But, you know, the Bible gives a lot of credit, and we get into the 21st and 22nd and 23rd chapter, which are very, very difficult chapters for us in our time to understand because they're so archaic in our thinking in the 21st century. But I want you to pay attention here for just a moment. Verse 7 of the 19th chapter. And pay attention to what it says. Very fascinating. Because when we have been programmed to see that it was just Moses and Moses only and nobody else. Now we read that Aaron was there too. Now we're finding out the elders of Israel were there also. And God wanted the elders to be there for a reason. We'll analyze that as quickly as we can. And Moses came and called for the elders of the people, not the people, and laid before them their faces all the words that Yahuwah commanded him. Those are previous verses. Now, verse 8, and all the people the elders of the people, rather, answered together and said, all that Yahweh has spoken, we will do. Because he's speaking to the elders, verse 7. He's not speaking to the congregation worldwide. Speaking to the elders. Now, the reason why would he speak to the elders for? And not everybody.
The elders were over a certain group of people. True. Or certain numbers.
Okay.
And they're leaders too, but not like Moses. Yeah.
The thing they didn't have is what we have. See, am I speaking? Everybody hears everything I'm saying. It's a big, huge, powerful voice, and we can amplify it so large. Moses could not. His voice wasn't so powerful that everybody under the sun heard. So he always taught the elders what God said. And the elders had to go back to their people and teach them. Yes.
And it would help Moses to have a testimony before everybody so they have witnesses. So Moses would have witnesses that this is what God said.
Right. And we read this chapter, we'll find out, actually, 20th chapter too, but we're not there, that God wanted the elders to be present because of a reason. We'll get to that in a minute. So we know that Moses returned the words, and Moses, last part of verse 8, and Moses returned the words of the people unto Yahweh. Well, Moses himself didn't do it. The elders did it. He told the elders what to say, what God said, and the elders went to their people, and it goes from like anything else. All right? It goes from after the elder said something to others, heads of the families, the families had to go and talk to their wives and their children, their aunts, uncles, mother, whatever they had to talk to. So the word had gotten down to them all before the Ten Commandments were given. But they were going to become a special to God. Now remember, in the 17th chapter, they were going to kill Moses. You know that? All right? They have not, according to Luke, in the 18th chapter, looked like everybody was just hunky-dory and wonderful, and they had a party, and it was wonderful people. No, this is 19th chapter tells you, no, they just left Ramses. Rephidim. After they had a war. Remember they challenged God, and so God sent a war, sent an army against them. To break fear into them. And anyway, let's go on down. And we come down here to verse 9 in Exodus 19th chapter, verse 9. And Yahweh said to Moses, lo, I come unto thee in a thick cloud that the people may hear when I speak unto thee, not them. Who is going to be present when he going to go and talk to Moses? Who's going to be present there? Everybody? No. He's talking to Moses. At the Ten Commandments, he's talking to everybody. Now he's talking to Moses. He wants those people, those elders, verse 7, to be present. And he says there, tell the people, and believe thee forever. And they will believe Moses forever. That's the object here. First thing God is going to do is tell the elders who he, God, is. And that they will now trust Moses. That's what God is doing here at this point in time. This is the first time God is now revealing himself to others besides Moses. All right? And Aaron. That is the power of God. He's going speaking to the people. And he's spoken, though, to Moses, and the others, the elders, were hearing what God was saying to Moses. And Aaron was also present during the entire process. Now, and Moses told the words of the people to Yahweh. And so, he goes, you got to come. Verse 10. And Yahweh spoke unto Moses, go unto the people and sanctify them today and tomorrow, and let them wash their clothes. Under the technicality here, okay. I'm not going to worry about technicality. I'm not heading that direction. I'm going to go in that. I just said, but then be ready on the third day. For the third day, Yahuwah will come down in the sight of all the people. Now, first, the previous verse there, he came and talked to Moses, and those elders heard that it was God talking to Moses. that they would trust Moses, and Moses would be honored from that point on by the elders. That's the picture. Now, we don't necessarily see that if we just go through and see Sesame DeMille's version of it. We don't see that. But we see here written down, and we have a now look at it and say, okay, what happened? And what do people do? Well, they sanctify the people and wash their clothes, verse 14. So both people had to be sanctified and the clothes had to be said, meaning cleaned. All right, clean up. All right, sanctification has to do with being pure and unpure, clean and unclean, physically clean, both on body and in clothes. Now, let's continue here. And be ready on the third day, don't not come unto your wives. Okay, you guys, yes, go ahead and feel sorry for yourself, but this is a no-no. And it came to pass on the third day in the morning, verse 16, that there were a thunders and lightnings and a thick cloud upon the mountain, and the voice of the trumpets exceedingly loud, so that all the people that was in the camp trembled. He said, when you hear the trumpet, start coming. The trumpet call here is to come, not to go away. To come. And so now the trumpet is being sounded and they're coming that way. There's thunder and there's lightning and something really nasty happened there. What happened to the mountain? It really caught on fire. And the smoke was black like a furnace. Now, you know, on a high mountain, what burns up there on a high mountain? Especially in that place where there's nothing but thorns and thistles. Maybe burn a bunch of thorns and thistles. But it was the rocks and everything else. The fire was so powerful and so mighty that the smoke rose like a furnace. Big black smoke. And God does talk to us in dark clouds, not in a white one. That's what he does. You know, when we think about rain, yes.
How come that stuff doesn't happen to us? Why doesn't that stuff happen to us?
It wasn't aimed to happen to us. It's only for our understanding, for our recognition, for our understanding of God and who he is. This did not have to repeat itself over and over again. He just had to do it once. Well, I think we'd probably be just like them. You'd be so frightened, your brain wouldn't have enough time to say, what's going on? What's happening? You'd be so afraid to even talk within your own self what's going on. Fear is so awesome here. It's not an ordinary fear. This is fear where God had their minds completely blanked out. Yes.
In my opinion, that stuff doesn't happen to us anymore because God didn't want us to be uncomprehending horses. A horse doesn't know what it's doing. It's just until you pull right or pull left. If he came down every year or every 6 months, whatever, and told us, okay, the next 6 months you guys are going to do X, Y, and Z, and every time did it over and over and over again, would we learn anything? We'd be completely uncomprehending. We'd just wait. Okay. Just wait till he does his next thing, then wait till he does his next thing. Not understanding anything about him or what he actually wants from us.
That makes sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, at this point in time, they're going to actually acknowledge there is a creator of heaven and earth, the one that Abraham and Isaac and Moses, Abraham, Isaac, and
Jacob.
Yeah, Jacob, we're very familiar with and aware of. But we're talking 400 years to 430 years from the time of Abraham to this point. And they were left out in the dark. Because God did not come down to deliver them out until the first part of chapter Exodus says, I've come now to carry out the covenant I had with Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. He didn't come down, so I'm going to have a covenant with them. No, I'm going to fulfill the covenant I had with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. That's why the book of Exodus is about the covenant of God with Abraham more than the covenant of God with the Israelites. Apostle Paul. He says it was added to Abraham's covenant, but it wasn't part of Abraham's covenant. And therefore, it was there to teach us something. Because in the covenant that God had with Abraham, it says, in you, the seed will be blessed, will bless the world. Simple as that. That's the covenant. Well, one of the many covenants he had with Abraham. That's the main one. So we're coming down here now. Where am I at now? Verse 19. And when the voice of the thunder sounded long and waxed louder and louder, Moses spoke and Elohim answered him by a voice. They, the people, heard the voice. They didn't hear a sound. They heard the voice. And Yahweh came down upon the mountain Sinai, or the mountain of God's called, on the top of the mountain. And Yahweh called to Moses to the top of the mountain. And Moses went up. Verse 21. Then Yahweh said to Moses, go back down there now and charge the people, remind the people, at least they break through unto Yahuwah to gaze, and many of them perish. Well, they were so terrified, they didn't move. Moses said, they're not going to go anywhere. And God says, go down and tell them, remind them, don't come up here. They're not here to see me. Don't come, have them come and see me as you were seeing me. I will not allow that. Now he also says, very interesting, verse 22, let the priest also, which come near unto Yahuwah, sanctify themselves, lest Yahuwah break forth upon them. Now that's an interesting phrase. There were no priesthood yet. That happened in the book of Numbers. I think it's at the beginning of the, from this point to the second year, they were there at Mount Sinai.
But, you know, Father spoke in the past tense a lot. And it doesn't always get picked up.
That's true. But people go challenge these things. That's okay. I don't care about it. It's not important. It's just that not even the priests of people who are the leaders, the elders of Israel, put this way, could not even come up. Don't approach. All right. And so Moses said unto Yahuwah, the people cannot come up to the mount, for thou charged us, saying, set boundaries about the mount. And they did. They put boundaries about it. This is how far you can go and no farther. That's what the elders did. That's what their job was to do. Put boundaries around the mount and go this far, no farther. But he said, get down there. Verse 24, and thou shalt come up, thou and Aaron with thee. That's once again, Aaron is now going to come up there with his brother. All right. And then, of course, Moses went down to tell the people and spoke to them. So what do you think so far? What is the scene you see? What's taking place? What is the object God is... Yes, Daniel.
The same object that Jethro got through. When he, being of Midian, he would have been a priesthood of many gods, most likely. However many there were, I don't know. And so he, at that moment when he saw all the stuff that happened to Moses, he said, wait a minute. Wow, now I know there really is only one God and he must be the really powerful one. The same principle, he wants everybody else, the individual people, to come to the same realization that he did, that, okay, there's one really, really powerful one, and that's what we should listen to. It's kind of a shock, kind of...
it was a shock.
Shock people into realizing there's only one God.
There is only one. And when we read this carefully, in the 20th chapter, we'll go on that 20th chapter next Sabbath, but it's very powerful. First commandment is powerful. The most powerful of all the commandments is the very first one. And it's have to read the complete commandment Remember to read the complete commandment. And the reason is because what they were had learned and lived for 400 years in another land. Yes.
If there's only one God, then why do we have to pray to Father Yahuwah in the name of Yeshua? So that, to me, is two that we have to address.
Oh, you're saying, okay, that's theology entering in here, and that subject matter.
I don't understand it myself.
Okay, there is only one Elohim, period, point blank. There is a son of Elohim. And that son of Elohim said, I do nothing until God tells me to do something. So he is answering to God in the New Testament over and over again. He says, I do nothing without him telling me what to do. So Yahshua was not the creator of heaven and earth like the one. It's the Father who did all this stuff or designed all this stuff. And Yahshua, the son of God, is the one that put it together. But he wouldn't do a single thing unless he had permission and exact orders from his Father what to do. So that's why the scripture says there's only one.
That confuses me so much. I have a hard time understanding that.
Yeah, because of Christianity.
Yeah. Yeah,
we got to get out of Christianity and read what it says in Torah.
I'm trying to.
Yeah. Well,
but it's so ingrained in my brain.
I know. People have a hard time because certain words are said, and they misunderstand the word God. What does it mean? What's the meaning of the word God? What's the meaning of Elohim? What does it mean? And if I went through that in the book of Genesis, that even a demon is called an Elohim. Yes. They have power. They have might. They have strength. That's what Elohim means. It means one who has many power, many strikes. Some only have one. A lot of them have. The devil himself is a very powerful Elohim. When Daniel went through King Saul, and it says, and Samuel came up out of the grave. That's not what reads there in Hebrew. It says, and Elohim came up out of the earth and talked. And it says, Elohim came up out of the earth. So a power, what the word El means, power or strength or might. And you have the Elohim, means that the lot of strength, a lot of power, a multiple word means a lot of strength, a lot of power. That's what that word kind of means. Yes, Ellie.
For me, it helps if I look at it like a family, because the scripture says, what? Know you not your judge angels? And he's talking to believers.
Yeah.
So that means, and then also Revelation 20, they're resurrected and they rule with God. So, to me, if I look at it like a last name, then they're family members, but there's only one original that created the others, and the others have power because of the connection in the family.
It's not so hard to figure out. It's just like what Yahshua said in the prayer in the 17th chapter of John. Make them echad as we are echad. Now, does that mean that the disciples are God? No. They're not. But they will be echad with God. So God and the Father, creator of heaven and earth, and the disciples were echad. Biblically speaking, they are echad. One. That's why the very beginning of Genesis, right? A man shall leave his father and his mother and echad with his wife. So whatever it is, they become echad. They become one. Not in the flesh only, but in truth, in spirit and work and functions. Just as much as the quote, if I use, please understand what I'm saying and don't get misunderstand it. It's just as much as, in the paralleling that, when Yahshua, who was a son of God, at the very beginning, was echad with God, but he worked and was, we'll put it this way, he was a great help to God. He was a helper to God to create what he created. And the very same thing, why the woman is who she is, because she's supposed to be echad with her husband and create with her husband the things that God has in mind. Yes. It's a picture of God.
And one of the things that in 1 Timothy 3:16 says, without controversy, great is the mystery of godliness. God was manifested in the flesh, justified in the spirit, seen of angels, preaching to the Gentiles, and believed in the world, and received up into glory. There's a bit of a mystery there, how he...
So how was he manifested in the flesh?
Well, in John 1, in the beginning was the Word.
No,
the
let's talk. How was he manifest in the flesh? Is it really the Father himself? Or what? Whatever Yeshua did because it's in, quote, the image of his Father. Remember, he told Philip, you've seen me, you've seen the Father. No, they didn't see the Father. What did he mean? Your eyesight, your eyeballs, just see me now, and you know what God looks like? Is that what he said? After the resurrection, they didn't recognize who he was. Right? So, who's this guy? It wasn't seen with the flesh. It was seen with inside the eyes. What's going on? Perceive. Yes?
We use that same term now. You see him, you've seen his Father. Or you see that guy, you've seen his Son. Not because they are the same being, like their legs are the same, but because they look at things the same, their approach is the same, they are so on the same page that they're the same. I think the mystery that we've in the past got confused with the Father, Son, and Spirit, the mystery of that became such a mystery that I grew up hearing, oh, well, it's just too hard to understand. And I found, no, that's a misunderstanding of it, because the book of David's writings, I'm supposed to understand how God thinks and how he works, and what he says, and why. So if I think it's too big a mystery, I do think it's amazing. I don't know about the translation of the word mystery there, but it is an amazing thing that God created a son, and a son was born. I think that's the amazing thing, but not who he is.
Okay, let's take another phrase here. Deuteronomy 5th chapter, verse 4. It says, and Yahweh talked with you face to face. Now, did he really look at their face and see their eyeballs and the teeth and the hair and talk with them? They saw his teeth, his eyeballs, and his hair. Did they really see him face to face? Or is it a phrase meaning, I'm talking to you bluntly? Yes.
I think we're going off on a little bit too much of a tangent here, but going back to the original question about praying in Yeshua's name, it's really... I don't see how anyone can construe that you're praying to more than one God. You're only still praying to one God. You're praying through a particular name. You're praying through the name of Yeshua. You're not praying through the name of some Muhammad or whatever.
Right.
You're praying through Yeshua.
Yep.
And that, you know, so when you say in Yeshua's name, you are almost praying as, in a sense, as a representative of Yeshua, not a representative of Muhammad or, you know,
He is our
big
brother. That's the end of the thing. So? The Apostle Paul even says, in the book of Philippians, Apostle Paul says, we're talking about people, he says, whatever is praiseworthy about them, say it. About anybody. So I say something praiseworthy about someone, I honor somebody, I respect them, and I say, you should listen to him. Look what he's done. A guy, okay, like my boss is dead. I always praise him, even though he's dead. I always honor him. I give him praise. Everybody talks about him. I tell him what he's like, and he praises him. And my boss now says, I sure wish I knew that man. And I said, you would have liked him an awful lot. That's praiseworthy. Yes?
Well, I also was thinking what Tammy was saying about the fact that when you are praying, you're praying under him. You know, you're putting his name. You're covered by him. So when you do pray, it's stating, you know, I'm asking this and thank you in Yeshua's name. So to me, that's always like signing. You know, my big brother. I'm with my big brother on this. Please.
So you know, I had an elder brother. I always spoke in honor of him. And I gave a tremendous amount of praise, you could say, to my brother. I even did it to my mother. Yes.
I don't recall where it is in Scripture, so somebody else knows. It claims that God does not hear the prayers of sinners. So if I, as a person, don't get me wrong, I'm not going to go into debate of what defining what a sinner versus someone who sins is. That's not part of the point. The point is that if I, as a person who has sinned, God has no reason to hear anything that comes out of my voice. It's worthless. It might as well be a cow bellowing in the field. It's worthless to him. So I go before him in somebody else's name. I mean, somebody else who has not sinned, i.e. usually would be the high priest, which your high priest would bring your sins before God, have them erased. In this case, the Messiah would for his name. You bring up in his name because he will stand as one who did not sin and bring your needs to
God. Known as a mediator.
Right, so that God will hear you. It's not that he is God, it's that he is one who didn't sin. Thus, God will hear everything that comes out of his mouth, which is a huge difference compared to what comes out of my mouth.
And that's the honor we have. That's the advantage we have. That's why it's important to pray in the name of the Son of God. We do it quite often. We talk about Yahshua. Sometimes we use the word Jesus. Sometimes we use the word Christ. Sometimes we use the word Messiah. Sometimes we use the Messiah. Not every language we want. I don't know what would be in Spanish. But nonetheless, we don't, you know, when you give honor to the person by naming him, that's giving him praise. It's giving him respect. It's giving him honor far above anybody else. Because that's the one that knows the Father face to face, literally. We have a picture, because of Christianity, there's two different gods out there. Maybe there's three different gods out there. There's three gods. Who says there's three gods? You can't find in the Tanakh anywhere. Well, it has a guy named Constantine. We won't go there. That's another theory altogether. You have to know who he is and what he did, because what his mama said, and everybody obeyed his mama. But we won't go there. That's another history. It's history. I just want to talk about God. I want to talk about Exodus 19th chapter. So what is it God's doing here? What is God doing here on the 19th chapter? What's his object? Okay. Anything else? Okay. Anything else?
He's introducing himself to people.
That's
so they
right.
Can see
He's
him.
Introducing himself to the people exactly who he is. You got it. Thank you. Yes. How is he going to introduce them? With the Ten Commandments. With fire. With thunder. With earthquakes. You know, those are, I said, what Daniel mentioned last week or there with Elijah. Elijah over there. Fire. Earthquakes or thunder. And what was the other one? Can't remember what it was. But those three things mankind cannot control. They have no say-so for it whatsoever. As God has final say-so and is the say-so of all three. The fire and the earthquake. I can't remember what that third one was, but I thought I'd never forget it, but I forgot it. No. But what was it? Wind! Okay. And then Yahshua said, you will be like the wind, means you can come and go wherever you want. But we'll go where God wants us to go. When the wind, when he tells us where to go, the wind will go and we will go with it. All right, so it's introduction himself, who he is. And now Israel is going to have a change. Remember, they pulled out of Egypt 3 months ago. And all they did was complain to Moses because they saw the power, authority, and might of Moses. Right? They didn't see the power, the authority, or the might of God. They saw the power, authority, and might of Moses. And now, they're seeing something that Moses didn't have control over. They're seeing something much power, more powerful, more stronger and greater and mightier than Moses. And what was the object? Well, we'll get to that next week in the 20th chapter. It's not a real lengthy chapter, so, but we'll go through the Ten Commandments, as it's called, or the Ten Words, statements, should we say, that are not just one word, but it's a whole concept, should we say, or a whole thought. I hope I'm confusing anybody today. You see, it's hard to read what it reads and having a background of a belief system that we raised up as little boys and little girls for generation and generation and generation and generation and generation for what? How many years? Thousands of years. Well, same thing is happening here to the house of Israel. From the time of Abraham to the time they were at Mount Sinai, how many thoughts, beliefs, concepts, misunderstandings did they really know who God was? No. They might have heard about him. They might have known that they are the descendants of Abraham. They might have known who their father there was of the 12 tribes. They might have known all that in fact and history. But did they know the creator of heaven and earth? No. Even Moses had to be taught that. When he was on the mountain for the first time with the burning bush. And he said, who are you? You know, he didn't know who he was. He couldn't figure out how that bush is still. And a voice came out of it. Oh, what? Have you ever seen fire? And a voice coming out of the fire? I've never. But he did. And out of that fire, the bush didn't burn. But there was fire. How can you possibly have a fire and that fire's talking to you? And what? And that fire is saying, throw down the stick. He's terrified, frightened, scared. He can't move left or right. He's terrified. He's got his shoes off because don't take shoes off. Then you walk, you try to run with barefoot and rocks, you know, you're going to hurt. Anyway, he was 80 years old. Anyway. And all of a sudden he's looking up, pick it up. By its tail. Myself, I mean, no human being in their right mind would pick up a snake, a deadly snake, by its tail. Yeah. That's the stupidest thing, stupidest stunt, stupidest idea you ever thought about. But he did. He was so afraid of that voice. And he had that voice, he introduced himself who he was. I am the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. That's who I am.
To go big. Because when he was with Moses in the burning bush, that was just like a little thing between him and Moses. But now he's got all of these thousands of people. You got to go big.
You got to have a big fire.
Burning bush ain't going to cut it. It ain't going to work. You got to go big. And you can't get much bigger than
above
the entire mountain,
there,
right?
It says it came down from above. So the fire came down from above. When we think about fire, sometimes we think it's a bad thing. Well, of course it is, physically. But on the other hand, it's also a form of purification. We are all to be tried in the fire like gold is tried in the fire and silver is tried in the fire. How many times must the gold be put into the furnace in order for it to be pure? 7 times. How long does it take to get silver to be purified where it's silver? 7 times. Put in the furnace, it's burnt up, you take it out of it. Put you back in again, and it repeats this thing for 7 times. That's why he said, all the gold is mine, and all the silver is mine. He's not talking about that stuff that's in the dirt. He's not talking about silver coins or silver dollars or gold dollars, gold coins. He's talking about people like he wants them to be. Gold is a very precious metal. He made, the reason why physical gold is very precious metal is because that's the word of God. What would you do with gold for anything? You build buildings with it? Well, can't do that. All we do is make earrings, jewelry, you know. Maybe we'll have plate something with gold. But, you know, what do you use gold for? You can't eat it. You can't bury it. Now, what do you use rocks for? To build. You can depend upon a stone made of solid rock. Even if it's made of sandstone, you can depend upon it that it holds your weight. And you can build on top of all that stuff. You put gold on top of gold. Gold is purified. It doesn't. You can't build on top of it. It just doesn't. Not just crumbles. It just moves out of the way. So all of it by itself, it is of earthly value only in the minds and hearts of the world. It's okay for you to get gold and turn around and sell it. Somebody's going to buy it because they think it's worth more than you do. So sell it.